We are back. College golf. Let's start again. It's been a while.
I'll start.
3, 2. We are back. College golf talk has returned. Burko and Brentley with you. It has been a few weeks. We will own it. We apologize. World travels, life, everything going on. But we're back to wrap up the fall season early on this Tuesday. You're headed down to the LPGA event, big one with the Annika. A lot of big names in the field, both professionally and not professionally. I know a good one on tap for you. And the holidays are here, my friend. We were very close to having our second remote college golf talk. Remember, we did the first one a year ago at USAC's with David Ingalls from Northwestern after the men won the St. Andrews Links Collegiate in Hudson, Ohio, where I now reside. Hudson's restaurant turns into Blitzen's for Christmas, and they don't mess around after they're Halloween themed. I believe it's 'Twas the Night, the Nightmare Before Blitzen's. They close for 72 hours, completely transform it to Christmas. And from early November to early January, I've already let the cat out of the bag with my Hallmark Christmas movies. Let's just say Devontae knows my favorite beverage there. And the owner, lo and behold, one of the owners, Kevin, grew up in Dr. Phillips, just miles from where I used to reside, and went to Bishop Moore.
Small world.
This close. We were this close. He was all in. We just, logistics, we couldn't make it happen. But I probably would have lost focus if you would have seen the whole Christmas theme throughout Blitzen's.
Well, what's your go-to drink? Because you would have been sipping that. And
Well, that's what they were saying. I would have been coffee this morning, but I'm going to say there's a list of 10 or 12 with, you know, Christmas theme beverages. So my goal is to at least sample everything before Christmas. But I digress.
Do you have a Christmas sweater?
Oh, I do. Snow on the ground. Loving the Midwest. That's what it's all about. Yes, I have a nice Hallmark Christmas sweater that I think is really going to get some use here in Northeast Ohio.
Well, I'm looking at this beard that you got going on. You might be Scott Calvin. You might be turning into the Santa Claus this time of year. We just never know.
Couple of weeks. College basketball is going to ramp up for me here early December. Excited for my Atlantic 10 responsibilities. But we could go on and on, you know, Christmas, Thanksgiving, we love it. But since we last chatted, I was in Scotland. You were at the Corn Ferry Tour. Then I went to Dubai for the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship. Thrilled and fortunate to be a part of that broadcast. And then we're just settling back in. So I've logged some miles. You've driven some miles. A little different, right?
Who do you think's traveled further? My 7 hours each way to Eastlake and flight up to French Lick, or your flight to Dubai?
Three flights, 23 hours, 27 from door to door of hotel to house.
You got me beat easily.
It was a blast. It was fun, but let's get on point. Eastlake Cup, you were there front and center. A quick recap. When I got back from Dubai and I saw the weather, I was like, oh, that's... We hadn't seen that at Eastlake in a few years, but Oregon for the women, Florida for the men, getting the job done. What stood out to you?
Yeah. Honestly, I was pretty surprised that Northwestern was able to get it done in the semifinals versus USC. I think on paper we had it probably tabbed as Oregon, USC from the get-go. But, you know, credit to the Wildcats. They've kind of come out and shown that, yeah, we haven't had the type of encore that we may have wanted to this fall, but you know, we're still formidable, especially in match play. Ariana Lau was a pleasure to get to know. Perfect pitch. She did some singing for us. Really well-rounded person and also a heck of a player. I think she's the probably the highest ranked recruit that Northwestern has ever had. She was like 56th in the world amateur golf ranking when she signed last November. So that stood out to me. But the Ducks, again, this is their third try, and they had never won a match at Eastlake before this year. And Derek Radley's squad gets it done. Kiara Ramiro, Sophie Hahn, the freshman, they call her the hammer. She's one to watch out for. She absolutely mashes the ball. And a freshman in Shyla Singh, too, contributing. She's kind of the antithesis, barely swings at 90 miles per hour, has actually had a deal with her coach. If she can get to triple digits, she'll get a prize. She did it at home during a speed training session, but you know whether she games it yet or not, that's to be determined. But yeah, great week for Oregon. But at the same time, you look forward, it's what, November 11th? Three more days is the deadline when amateurs have to declare a professional to compete in the final stage of LPGA Q School. Suvi Chaivinnachatham, the Ducks' talented sophomore, it seems at least a couple weeks ago she was 50-50. I think we know a lot of times when things are 50-50, they end up going the way of professional golf in Q School. So again, Derek Radley said she's playing the best golf that he's ever seen her play. I think if he's saying that and she knows that, why not take a shot and change your career, change your life? College golf, hate to say it, but if you're playing like that, you need to give professional golf a shot. So we'll see what happens. But I think as of now, probably you're looking at an Oregon team that's not quite as good when they tee it off early February to start their spring season as they were here at East Lake in this fall.
For the men, the Gators getting the job done. JC Deacon's squad, as you and I were discussing a little bit earlier, maybe no true star standout, if you will, but 1 through 5, when things are clicking, could probably go toe to toe with anyone in the country.
Well, and the key for them at Eastlake was the resurgence of Parker Bell. He's shown flashes in the past. Made the semifinal to the USAM a couple years ago at Cherry Hills, qualified for the US Open last summer at Pinehurst, made the semis of a Western Am last summer. So he has the firepower. We know he's one of the longest, if not the longest player in college golf, could hit over 200 mile per hour ball speed. But the problem for him has just been keeping that golf ball on the planet off the tee. And conversely, just trying to keep it in check emotionally, just two up, two down. You talked to his head coach, JC Deacon. There were too often times where Parker Bell, you could tell what he would be shooting on the golf course. And for the other four guys who are in the lineup, that's not helpful. And this week was a week where Parker Bell played well in stroke play and then earned the clinching point in match play, beating Ben James. And that was a heck of a match. I don't know if you caught any of that, Berko, at the end, but Parker Bell is like 4 up with 5 to play, and Ben James just comes storming back, makes a bomb on 15, chips in on 17. And I think I have a nickname for Ben James. I'm going to call him the Undertaker, because he chips in and he just has this like glazed look on his face. He's just like, and he's just floating toward the hole to get his golf ball out of the hole. The guy is just flatline on the golf course. So I'm going to call him the Undertaker. We'll see if that sticks, but credit to Parker Bell. He makes a birdie on top of him and then gets up and down and makes about a 12-15 footer on 18 to win that match and win it for the Gators. So, but like you said, no true star, no discredit to a Jack Turner or a Luke Poulter, but easily the deepest team in college golf. And the Gators are going to have some thinking to do in terms of how they do qualifying, because there are a lot of players who are playing well. Josh Bai was over in Dubai with you, I believe. And, he'll certainly be trying to get into that lineup. Trevor Gachevsky as well, a freshman. Noah Kent still has not been in the starting lineup, I believe. He was an Indy at Aaron Hills, I'm pretty sure. So a lot of players trying to get some run. It's just going to be a matter of, how JC does qualifying and how he ultimately whittles down to that 5 that he's going to go to the NCAA postseason with.
Our fall finale and final college golf talk of 2025 continues, leading you into an interview Brentley had with Megha Ghane, the Stanford senior, the standout who won the U.S. Women's Amateur Championship this past summer. You had a chance to catch up with her, but before we get to that, you wanted to maybe rattle off the superlatives, the best fall campaigns we saw by players, teams, surprises, disappointment, et cetera, and quickly buttoning up Ben James. For me, eerily reminiscent of a Dustin Johnson 20 years ago coming out of Coastal Carolina. The talent, the walk, the body type, as you said, the flat line. I'm not saying he's going to go on to win 20-plus events or whatever Dustin did and win major championships, but he's cut from that same cloth, in my estimation.
Kind of silly at times, too. Yeah, I could. That's a great comp.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Not just long, but
long enough in this day and age. All right, best fall by a team, women, men, who are some of the ones that caught your eye and then you're thinking, all right, maybe we're on to something. You know what? I'm going to start first because I know where you're going and I'm trying to make it different. I'm going to give the Vanderbilt men a lot of credit for their fall campaign. You know, for years, it seems like we've been talking, this is the year, this is the year. And then it wasn't the year. And last season, you're like, okay, heck of a fall. Really good. Third currently in the rankings, more than I expected for them. So it's easy to say, hey, who's at the top? They had the best fall. I'm going to give a little pop to Scotty and the boys in Nashville.
Yeah, they got a guy by the name of John Ed Steed. He's got two names, John and Ed. So if you have two first names, you might not have any, but he's been a huge surprise, and I think he's been kind of the X factor for them. But I'm going to go with Virginia. They won at the Golf Club of Georgia right before coming to Eastlake. They won that nine-hole stroke play sprint due to the weather at Eastlake. You know, one through four, you know, these are the same guys who were on that national runner-up team from a year ago. And then the emergence of Michael Lee. He hadn't played a round of college golf until that Friday at the Golf Club of Georgia, ties for ninth there, wins the stroke play at Eastlake, and then wins his first match 7-6. And I was talking to him later that night, and he's like, I would have beat Rory McIlroy today 3-2. This is the best I've ever played. So if they can get him kind of locked in like that, playing as a freshman and theoretically what would be, what, the five spot for them, they've already proven they can win big-time events. They won the Hogan as well, second at the Honors Course. So in stroke play, they only lost to one team in four events or three and a half events if you want to count Eastlake. But again, there's not another team that has had the collective body of work as Virginia. Doesn't mean I think they're going to win or that they're my favorites right now. We'll get into that a little bit later. But if we're handing out team of the fall, it's got to be Virginia.
And then on the ladies' side, I think we're both in the same boat with the Stanford women. You know,
I tried to go a different direction.
I know. A few weeks ago, I probably would have said Wake Forest. You know, they're not undefeated, so we're not going to go into 2026 saying, are they running the table? We know Ann Walker. We know the talented team. They're setting themselves up for May. And we've done it enough. The best team doesn't always win. But when you look at their ranking, and the biggest surprise for me is Megha Gane. Because when I spoke with her at the Stevens Cup at Shore Acres outside of Chicago, it was about a month after she won the U.S. Women's Am. I said, God, I hadn't seen you since. What a show, et cetera, et cetera. And she got, I didn't do anything. She got needed to just decompress, sort of regroup, get excited, work on my body, work on a lot of things to be ready for the spring. And I thought, wow, that's a very mature approach to now having a better understanding of a college golf campaign. And she had one of the best falls of anyone in the country.
Three top fives and a win.
Correct. So you put her with Paula Martin, San Pedro, and Revuelta, and Ortengren, and Kelly Sue. They are who they are, right? What did Herm Edwards say? That they are who we thought they are. You know,
they were.
They're on paper, they're better than everyone else. No disrespect, because that's what excites us. We saw what Wake Forest was able to do to them at the Stevens Cup. There are a lot of talented squads. And like you, I'm like, ooh, who could I pull from to say maybe this team? I'm not there yet.
Yeah, we were doing the Annika Award watch list that's going to be released, you know, Tuesday around 10 a.m., which after we're done recording this, I got to get on posting that. But there was a very strong debate that we could have had all five Stanford Cardinal on that 25-player list. Kelly Sue clocking in at 29th in the scoreboard rankings. So there was a possibility they were going to have five. And at the end of the fall, I don't know if that's ever been done before. So again, it's hard. I guess it's cliche to say this may be the best team ever that they've had, but I don't know. It's pretty dang good.
Yeah, they're really good, and we'll continue to watch them obviously throughout 2026. In terms of best fall by a player, I like where you're going with Brian Kim of Duke. I'm going to go like off the board. I'm going to go with Fifa Laupakti from Arizona State, who I got to watch and walk for 3 or 4 days in Dubai at the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship. We've been monitoring him and watching him pound for pound. Many see him as the longest hitter in college golf. I know plenty can make that claim. The guy was 5'6".
He weighs like 90 pounds, though. So that's...
And he moves it. Moves it. He took some lines at the Majlis course in Dubai that you're like, huh. But freshman season, breaks his finger, needs surgery trying to catch a football. And he is named for soccer, world football, because his dad was going to name him FIFA or UEFA. Good thing he went with FIFA, I think. He can go. He's won two big tournaments in college. I'm going off the beaten path to say I think what he did in Dubai now maybe gets him to that next level, like a first, second team All-American if he continues that.
Yeah, and he's had a pretty solid year. It didn't play well in his last college event of the fall. I think he was like 71st, but again, definitely a lot of talent and is going to be in the lineup. I did go with Brian Kim at Duke. I know Ben James is number one. Part of me was just trying to be, you know, trying to zag a little bit because I did take Virginia as my top team, but you know, Brian Kim to have two wins, you know, two pretty decent wins, the Bryan Brothers Collegiate and the Golf Club of Georgia. He was second at their home event to kick off the fall, and his worst finish is 15th, played five times. I love the consistency there. And, you know, really once you get outside the top eight or nine guys, everyone's had kind of a bad event. And for Brian Kim to just be a consistent presence for a team that, you know, I think collectively is underachieving, and obviously they're coming off a head coaching change as well. So I think all in all, Brian Kim to me gets the gold star for the fall.
I like that. Over on the women's side, I'm going to double down with Mega. What I had said coming off the Stanford, I always, right or wrong, I don't know if the data supports it. I always feel like there's that drop off. We mentioned a Walker Cup hangover, a Curtis Cup, or what she accomplished at the women's amateur. But because I don't think there is a true defined one big separation of two. You could say Kiara Romero, I'd like to see her win more. I know you've got someone in the SEC that's caught your attention, but right now I truly feel like there are 5, 10, maybe 12 that we can make an argument that, wow, they had the best fall.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good resumes being built on the women's side. I went with Weed from Mississippi State. She's the top-ranked player in the country right now, hasn't finished outside the top four. She has a win. It's been a solid schedule. Again, I'm with you. Like, Kiara Ramiro's had a great year so far, second, third, really tough schedule, but like she needs to win more. And that's kind of been what's holding her back. I think I did the stats and I could be a little bit off here, but something like in the last calendar year, she has two wins and seven runner-up finishes. Maybe it's eight, but it's like seven or eight runner-up finishes worldwide or world ranked. And to me, that percentage, like that batting average, has to be a little bit more skewed toward winning. What's that, like 250 or something? She needs to be over 300 in terms of what she's closing out. She needs to win one of every three times she's up there in contention. So I'm going with Avery. She's, you know, an integral part, probably easily the most valuable player, you know, to that Bulldogs team. So yeah, I'm going to go with her. Great fall.
Biggest surprise by teams, men and women, who got to where they are now in November that maybe you didn't see coming?
Well, this was a team that I probably mentioned this a couple weeks ago when we had Cameron and Lance on, but, and I kind of give Cameron a hard time, but he didn't even have Arkansas men ranked in the top 30 preseason. And I had them 14th or something like that. And I don't know. I felt like this roster was one that was retooled, some transfers, some freshmen, a couple familiar faces, but Brad McMakin's squad hasn't finished worse than fourth. They won their home event. They finished third at the Carmel Cup, third at Cincinnati's event, which is probably their weakest showing by far of the fall. But again, they slot right in there at eighth in the country right now. And I don't know if anyone besides myself expected them to even come anywhere close to that. So they're my surprise on the men's side. And I'll just roll right into the women. I think Wake Forest, to be able to do what they did at the Annika and then to win the Stevens Cup, beat Stanford there, beat Stanford in match play. I was a little bit concerned when you add a couple of transfers. You have Morgan Ketchum, or I guess they just added one transfer, but didn't know how Morgan Ketchum would, you know, acclimate to Wake. Chloe Kovaleski, waiting to see what she did kind of in her sophomore after joining the team in January. She obviously has played well. She's been a little inconsistent though. And Macy Pate had some concerning finishes during the summer and toward the end of last spring. I just didn't know if it could all come together, but I mean, to their credit, we're going to see Anster Dendunnan at the Annika this week playing as a sponsor exemption. There's some pieces there. And I think Wake Forest, that they're not going anywhere. This isn't a rebuild. They're going to be, you know, a match play team probably, or at least on the periphery of that. And we'll see what they could do.
I'm going to go Alabama men just outside the top 10, Auburn women, a couple of programs with tradition, which with history, with players and talent, but honestly, in recent years, it hasn't maybe come together in that postseason. So those are a couple that jump out to me of, all right, we're now starting, you know, to get a sense of maybe they're back, if you will, in that national conversation. And I know that leads you into maybe the biggest surprise by a player, someone from that Alabama men's team that has been maybe a reason why they're resurging near that top 10.
I think this probably has the potential to be the story of the fall, at least individually. And my memory could certainly be failing me, but the fall that William Jennings has had, being able to win Folds of Honor, tie for first at the Ben Hogan, especially considering that he had only played twice before in college golf. And his very first start last spring at the Watersound Invitational, shot 92, first ever round of college golf, and then was going to shoot 90 again until Jay Sewell took the scorecard out of his hand and he WD'd in that round. And I think that when we talk about coaching decisions and impact, that was probably the best thing that Jay Sewell could have done, because to put up not one but two scores above 90, that could have been debilitating. But credit to William, made match play at the USAM, had a really tough match, could have won his first round match there. But a really impressive player physically. He's a big kid. I think he's like 6'5 or 6'6. And it just needed to get his irons in a spot where he could be more consistent. And, I should have this story in front of me because I wrote it a couple months ago. But it was something like he had changed the length of his irons at some point, and it just threw his ball striking off. And I was like, well, why did you do it? He's like, well, I don't really know. So he's changed those back, and he's been a really nice surprise. He's not ranked nearly as highly as I think he should be. Maybe that maybe the numbers are off there, but yeah, he gets it in my book. And then on the women's side, I mentioned her, Morgan Ketchum from Wake Forest. I think she might be on the Annika watch list. I can't remember, but, you know, ranked in the top 25 in the country right now. She made five starts. She hasn't finished outside the top 13. So, that's the type of consistent year. Doesn't have a top five yet. So she needs to contend, figure out kind of the difference between, you know, a top 10 finish and potentially winning. But that's a really nice, solid score to have in the middle of your lineup if you're Kim Llewellyn and Ryan Potter.
Then a couple of outside the top 10 currently that you believe will finish inside the top 10. I'm going to peruse for you. I like you. I'm going to go Ole Miss, the Rebels, for the ladies. They're 15th. I think Corey Henkes is underrated. Yeah, they won the national championship a few years ago, but I feel like they're a fixture now in that 1B tier, if you will. And I have a feeling they'll get back into that top 10. And then for the men, I will go with Oklahoma. They are currently 13th, if we've learned anything through the years. We don't doubt the boys in Norman. So that's a quick glance of that for me.
I mean, I don't know if I've quite learned that yet, but
you'll get there.
I've taken a lot of flack from the boys in Norman over the years. I'm going to go with Texas Tech. It's quite surprising that they are 15th, and I think it's just because they had a really tough event out of the gates at the Carmel Cup. You know, maybe Connor Graham looking forward to the Walker Cup a little bit there, kind of leaked some oil down the stretch. But when you think about Connor Graham, Tim Wiedemeyer, Adam Bresnew, the transfer out of Odessa College via Morocco, has had a really nice year as well. All three of them are ranked in the top 25 or so individually. I think it's just a matter of they need something like outside of that. Like the next highest ranked player I'm looking right now is Ben Gregg at 458. And so they can't just be a three-headed monster all the way through, but you know, I think they're going to figure it out. Simon Hovdahl's been kind of a disappointment. He's only played once so far. That kind of a guy out of Sweden who's coached by the same coach as Ludvig Olberg. His coach had a lot of high praise for him as well coming into this. So he's got to get it figured out. Sean Keeling was kind of a top recruit a year ago, had made a run at either the British Am or the U.S. Junior or something like that. But he's got to get it going. Like, I don't think he's played at all. So who knows? This is a team that started a walk on, you know, right out of the gates in that first event. So, but they'll figure it out. And you know, I think they're going to maybe quietly be, you know, around that 7 or 8 ranking, which is kind of perennially where they've been. And then on the women's side, ASU, a little bit deeper. They're going to add Pimpusa Ruprong from Thailand midseason. That'll be a jolt. Patience Rhodes, super consistent. So, you know, perhaps just a little bit of depth and some more things going their way. And, you know, maybe a little luck at the Darius Rucker as well. That seems to be an event that's been kind to them. And if you play well there, that can certainly boost your ranking. So that's what I'm banking on, is for ASU to have another good performance up there at Long Cove Club.
If it was to be decided today, this week, your favorites to win it all, I think we're both with Stanford on the women's side. But for the men, where's your lean right now?
So I went with Florida, maybe half because I wanted to swoop them and claim them before you could. I love the depth. I love the energy and kind of the atmosphere around the team. You know, being around them for a few days, and you know, we've always seen how those squads have operated over the years and the job that JC Deacon and Dudley Hart have done. But you know, this is a team that I think could be super dangerous because they're just, I don't know, there's just something about it. There's just a closeness, and there's a collective about them. And if Parker Bell keeps playing like he's playing, I think they're going to be able to beat anybody, as they showed at Eastlake.
Texas and Oklahoma State, I'm torn. It's easy to go there. peaks and valleys throughout the fall, but I think their puzzle pieces are as good as any team in the country. You just have to, I get the sense they'll be there come Tuesday at the bare minimum next May in La Casa. Some quick news before we get to the interview with Mega Gane. Bruce Hepler, 31 years, a fixture, a staple at Georgia Tech, announcing his retirement after the end of this season. One of my top guests we've ever had. The story is Bruce Hepler. I guess
just UNLV basketball.
I don't think anyone can touch that. But I guess just time, right? You know, you're mid-60s, and they're still looking for that team national title. I say it every year. Shocking that the Yellow Jackets have never won a national championship in men's golf. But truly one of the good men. We'll miss him.
Yeah, a couple NCAA individual champions, though, including Hiroshi Tai a couple years ago. One of only two coaches with three U.S. amateur winners ever. And you look at what some of his guys have done on tour with Kuchar and Mulder and Ollie. And, I mean, he's truly been one of the best. I don't know if we revealed when we had him on. We may have mentioned it at the top of the show, but remember when he got stuck in the elevator? Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. I think he talked about it, or maybe he talked about it before we hit record.
I think it might have been before. But yeah, he and for people who don't want to go back and listen too, yeah, it was funny that evening before he was in his office and he was stuck in the elevator, and according to Bruce, which is it's kind of hard to believe, but went out the escape hatch, you know, like a John Wick or Jason, you know, Matrix Bourne, or maybe something like, yeah, Jason Bourne, and escape from the elevator hatch. But yeah, it was pretty telling. I mean, first off, like, Bruce Hepler's done a great job, but one of the most humble people I think you'll meet as well. Like, he didn't want this to be announced now, but I think they kind of forced his hand, obviously, for recruits and things like that. I think he wanted to just tell everyone at La Costa on his way out and wave goodbye and not look back. But it was pretty telling. He did talk to Ryan Harrington of Golf Digest a couple days ago, and he had kind of shared this with us too. He just didn't like, you know, how college sports had evolved, and it was kind of more about what can you pay me, what kind of deals can you get me, than, you know, how can you make me a better player and a better person. And I think there's a lot of coaches, right? You've told the Saban story before. It's just a different way of doing things, and I don't necessarily think it's good or bad. It's just, if you got into coaching for one reason and it's not, you know, how it's been for decades, and you're getting up there in age, you know, good for him. So, I mean, we'll definitely miss him, but he's not going to go anywhere. He's been the treasurer for like 30 years for the GWAA. I imagine they still want him keeping the books in order.
A couple of quick thoughts. Give me the latest on a crazy final round cancellation and then signing day later this week.
Yeah, well, let's start with it. I was going to write this, but I just didn't think it was – I thought it pretty much already got out there. Steve Bradley from South Florida posted something, and a lot of coaches saw it, and then he had deleted it. But, you know, basically Florida Atlantic's event at Panther National, the JT co-designed course down in South Florida, they had a tournament. Some weather got the schedule all out of whack, and I think the initial narrative was – that there was member play at 1 p.m. and because they had to finish the second round on Tuesday morning, they just scrapped the final round prematurely because there would be no way that they would be off the course by the time the members needed to tee off. And turns out, you know, that may have been, you know, only 75% of the story. Some other teams had some flights, and, you know, the truth always lies somewhere in the middle. But I think the optics of it, just canceling a tournament and knowing that the members need to be off at a certain time, I guess, you know, that's where those clubs' priorities should be, because there's members that pay a lot of money to be members of those clubs. And I don't have a huge issue for it. And I know the folks at Tarleton State, who got the win, 36 hole victory by 8 shots over South Florida. I understand that they're probably thrilled. Yeah. They're fine with it. And I would understand why, Coach Bradley at South Florida? Wouldn't be. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if Panther National is going to be hosting any more college events, but yeah, that just, that kind of stuck out. And I think the story needed to be shared at least a little bit, at least on a podcast medium. And then signing day. Yeah. Geared up, early signing period starts this Wednesday, runs for a week. You did mention this would be the last episode. I think I'm going to get Luke Colton on next week. He's the top ranked player out of Frisco, Texas, going to Vanderbilt next fall. So, so yeah, maybe you're done, well, but yeah.
Well, that's the thing, though. There are no real surprises. It's right. Everyone for years, like, oh, the three hats. No, 99.9%.
I don't even know if football. Football doesn't really do that anymore either, right?
It seems less because I think it's tied to the monetary decision.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's no surprises, but this is the 26 class, and I'll probably write something on this tomorrow. But I talked with Jay Sewell about it and Scott Limbaugh. It's just like collectively, this class has the potential to be as good as that 2011 class. And that's pretty impressive to say because Blades Brown turned pro. Henry Gwan reclassed to 25. He's at Oklahoma State right now. Hasn't played. That's pretty surprising, to be honest with you. But you think about Colton and Mason Howell, who just announced today that he's going to play in the RSM Classic here in 2 weeks on the PGA Tour. Tyler Watts. I mean, these are all big-time players, and there's a lot of schools that are really happy with their class. They got at least two studs, and Georgia's going to be up there in my class rankings, Vandy, North Carolina. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. Check out that list when it comes out Wednesday morning. And yeah, I think that's pretty much
Charlie
it.
Woods. Woods, yeah.
There's been some rumblings. I've seen on Twitter that apparently Charlie Woods visited Alabama. Obviously I can't just call Sewell up and say, did Charlie visit? Because he wouldn't tell me yes or no. But I do know that they did have recruits, this past weekend, and Charlie may or may not have been one of them, but, it seems like there's been some rumblings that he may have already committed to Florida State. I think those are false, but yeah, he's definitely looking around the SEC and kind of the Southeast and some big time programs. And I mean, good for him too, because well, I mean, what, maybe a year and a half ago, the narrative was like, this kid's barely going to play. Like he'll be the ninth guy on Stanford and he's, you know, not going to be anything in college, but he's ranked eighth right now in the AJGA. I mean, those rankings are obviously just, yeah, he gets a lot of points for winning their invitational, but junior golf scoreboard, he's up there. The Tugger rankings, he's in the top 100 now. So he's developed into a really nice player and he's got the speed. Like he's going to play in the state championship again for Benjamin School this week. And yeah, he's coming together nicely. And I mean, again, like kudos to him. There's a lot of pressure on him. There's been a lot of eyeballs on him. And I think he's delivered more than a lot of people thought, and he's definitely proven people wrong.
Always fun to break it down, see what the future of the game holds. As we said, we're going to put a bow on it. You might throw a little bonus one-on-one interview out there in the coming weeks, but our thanks to each and every one that tune in to hear us ramble and have a little fun on College Golf Talk. Couldn't do it without you. Couldn't do it without our guest as well. Thanksgiving around the corner, Christmas, the holiday season. Want everyone to be healthy, happy, enjoy it. And we will return in 2026. But don't go anywhere, Brentley. It's time for your sit-down interview with Mega Gane. Always enjoy it, my friend. Best to you and the family during this upcoming Christmas holiday season.
Enjoy Blitzens and happy Merry Christmas and a great Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much.
When it's got a wind chill of 12, but we'll have to fight through it.
Do you do a turkey trot?
It's funny. They don't have one here. I like on Thanksgiving, but they have a Frosty's Frozen 5 on Christmas Eve morning. So that's what I've been.
Oh, you're going to do that. Yeah.
Working up for the 5 mile.
Kate might
rise.
Win that. She might
there's
win.
There's a strong possibility she will. But we digress. Always fun. Best to each and every one of you. We always thank you for listening to College Golf Talk. Now here's Brentley with the Stanford standout, Mega Gane.
All right, welcome to a special edition of College Golf Talk. We like to call these extra credit, where we kind of dive deeper into some of the best players in college golf, maybe even sometimes professional golfers. But this week, as we get closer toward the holidays, we are pleased to welcome on the reigning U.S. Women's Amateur Champion and one of the best players in the women's game, Stanford senior Mega Gane. Mega, it's been quite a busy few months for you. Have you had a chance to digest Bandon Dunes and everything that's happened in your life since?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think so. I think I've been able to digest it. It's all been a lot of good stuff. Our season just ended like a week ago now, so I'm adjusting to the off season, which is like, it feels like I'm doing nothing, which is actually pretty nice, but I'm not used to doing nothing at all. So I'm trying to get a little better at that.
So when you say nothing, how much golf are you actually doing practice wise these days? And how much do you plan to do over the next couple months before the spring season starts?
I'm doing no practice at all. So I haven't touched my clubs and I don't plan to till after Thanksgiving, maybe a few rounds of golf for fun. But other than that, I'm taking a real break for a bit, which I do pretty much every winter.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's rewind the clock a little bit to Bandon Dunes. When you arrived that week, be honest, what were your expectations? Like, was it one of those things where you, as soon as you got on property, you're like, all right, I'm feeling great, like I can win this thing? Or was there a little bit of trepidation just for whatever reason?
No, I think I had a really good feeling going into the week. I kind of called that I might win before I even got to Bandon. But I don't know. I think it's a feeling I have at a lot of tournaments, and it doesn't always happen. So I don't know if that's very telling or not. But I definitely felt good going into it.
Had you ever called your shot before like that, thinking that you might win? And
No, not like that. So first time.
What's the lasting memory from that week? When you think back, it could be a shot, it could be a match, it could be something that happened off the course, but what's kind of logged at the front of your brain as you think back to early August?
Yeah, honestly, the entire week was really special in its own way. I really enjoyed stroke play. I thought it was, I was paired with Astrid Talley and Catherine, who were just really good players, and Asterix
future Stanford Cardinal.
Yeah, future, and we didn't know it at the time, but I was working the Stanford angle pretty hard on those days for her. So it was cool to see her play, and she's like such a young talent, and like, I don't know, just like a fresh, it just seemed like just like it was just fresh perspective to see someone like so young, and kind of reminded me of myself when I was younger. So really enjoyed that, and then made it into match play, and that was a lot of tough matches, and each of those had a lot of special moments, especially in the last 5-6 holes that I feel like I played really well over the course of the whole week. And then obviously my semifinal comeback is the one that stands out to me the most from the whole week. And then the moment from when I won, and then being able to celebrate with my family that was there the whole week was great.
So I think anytime you have success at that big a stage, and you probably had experience coming off of what you did at Olympic in 21 too at the Women's Open. But how do you handle expectations changing, whether it's from others, from yourself, and how do you kind of get back into playing, I guess, quote unquote, regular college golf or regular tournaments?
Yeah, I don't know. It can be difficult. I think I've found it maybe a little bit harder back in 2021 than I did this year. Mostly just because I felt like I was thrown right back into the college schedule, which is like a whole other beast of its own. So you don't really have time to overthink anything. Just felt really solid in my routines, and continued to keep the same goals that I had for myself about this year, which was just lowering my scoring average more and more, and was able to do that. I wanted to win this fall, was able to do that too. So I think just like setting a good group of goals for yourself before I went into it helped.
Now you took quite an extensive break, or at least a little bit of a break last summer, a little bit banged up, you had an illness, you went to Spain, but in the last year, what part of your game do you feel like has been unlocked the most, and what you've been able to lean on that maybe you weren't able to lean on 2 or 3 years ago?
I don't think there's a part of my game I can point to specifically. I think my game's not drastically different than it was a few years ago. I just feel like everything's maybe gotten just a little bit better. I really like where my putting's at right now. So maybe that's maybe the biggest thing. But yeah, other than that, I've gained probably 5-10 yards off the tee and just continued to feel stronger and better. So just maybe a little more stamina that just is easier to play golf year round if you just feel physically better. So, but yeah, overall, not like I changed course or anything drastically from a few years ago.
Have you switched putters out or done anything differently? Because there's a lot of elite players that seem to be searching continuously in that aspect of the game, and they switch out putters, they switch out grips, try to find some sort of magic bullet for it. But what has your putting evolution looked like?
No, I switched putters at the very beginning of college and haven't switched since. Actually, no, that's a lie. I switched at the beginning of the summer, but it's essentially the exact same putter that I had. So I wouldn't even call it a switch.
Are you now a mallet? Or you?
I've always been a mallet, but this one has like a different neck on it. Like the, I don't know. I'm not, as you can tell, I'm not very like equipment savvy.
Gear centric.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I don't really think there's a magic anything. I guess just find what works for you as long as you feel good about it. And then, you know, hitting the ball online and make sure you're a good green reader, whatever gets that done, I guess is good.
Is putting more artistic or do you think it's more technical?
I think both. Like the technique has to be there. The foundation has to be solid. And that's just repetition, making sure you're hitting, you know, end over end and hitting the center of the club face. And that just comes from good technique. But I think heat of the moment putting feels a lot more artistic to me because like all that stuff goes out the window and then you're left with like just making sure the ball gets in the hole. So, yeah, which is, I would say I'm a fairly, like, I have a fairly artistic feel with my short game. So, like, that helps in, like, really crushing pressure moments.
How would you describe your golf swing?
I don't know. It works. I've never been asked that before, but yeah.
Well, I mean, if you had to, if you look in the mirror at it or anytime you see it on video, what do you think? Are you, what is your immediate reaction?
I mean, I like it. It's mine. I've learned to love it. I'm not like, I feel like I let my golf coach do most of the swing analysis type stuff. And she always uses the analogy that like a race car driver doesn't exactly need to know what's going on under the hood. It's just the mechanic does. So like that's kind of how I feel about my golf swing. And yeah, we got like a good dynamic and I put a lot of trust in her, and I don't really dive too deeply into like the mechanics of my golf swing unless I feel like there's something that needs attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I'm asking because you've been a pretty elite ball striker over the course of your career, I think. And you mentioned your coach, Katie Rudolph. A funny story about how you guys came to start working together. She basically had to practically beg to be your coach back when you were 7 or 8 years old. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm like fuzzy on the details, but it was when I was about, 7 or 8 years old.
And you guys meet on a driving range and she obviously sees something in you. Can you speak to her impact on your game and your evolution as a player and a person over all these years? I mean, she was at Bandon Dunes. She's kind of been with you lockstep ever since then. Mm-hmm. How much of an impact has she had on you?
Yeah, I think I'm really lucky that I found like a player coach dynamic that works really well for me and has continued to work well. Like I know a lot of players that struggle with finding like the coach that they feel like understands them and they see the same trajectory. And it's not like we always exactly see eye to eye, but we have a relationship where she knows me so well and I know her so well that like we can say yes or no to each other to certain things. And like confront the hard questions about whatever it may be, like golf or goals or maybe something that's holding me back from getting better and better. And like just a really clear line of communication on where I want to be and how we see getting there. So, yeah, and because she's known me since she was a kid, I don't feel like there's a single thing she doesn't really understand about my personality, which makes it really just a lot easier to have as a coach when you guys know each other so well. So it's been good, and I feel like it's just the beginning, so that's exciting.
What was a tough question that you guys had answered in the past that led to something special?
Like nothing like too tough. I guess there's been like moments where I wasn't super happy with my putting, and she's like, well, I really think you should change your putter. And I'm like, I really don't think I should. And like, we like just being able to like very clearly say that to each other is nice. And, what else? Like, I guess just like having the trust in each, like she believes that I will like see through and put my best effort into whatever change she thinks that I should try to make and really look into it before I decide whether that's something that I want to do or not. And I know that when she brings something to me, it's something that she's thoroughly thought about and researched. So, yeah, I don't know if that's a good answer.
It's a great answer.
Yeah.
Signing day begins this Wednesday for, you know, the lucky class of 2026. When I first started doing this, it was like the class of 2011, and now we're all the way at 26. But they start signing Wednesday. What do you remember about your recruitment? And was Stanford the only place? Was that 1A, 1B, 1C? Was that the only place you wanted to go?
Yeah, it was 1A through Z for sure. I told Coach Walker this is the only place that I see myself going, and just kind of hope she felt the same way, and she did. So I committed on the very first day that I could, June 15th. And yeah, Stanford's been a lot better than I ever thought it would be. So it's been a blessing.
Was it intimidating at first, kind of walking into this program, knowing all the history, you know, albeit only, you know, a decade or so of really good history, but, you know, kind of walking into a team with a bunch of superstars and, you know, Rose being on that team and Coach Walker and her success, was it intimidating at all?
It probably should have been more intimidating than it was, but I was a pretty like confident 18-year-old. So I kind of just came in here like ready to go. And the team was so welcoming, and you don't really think of the accolades when you're here. You just think of the people that you're around, and the environment here at Stanford is like every day is just like, it feels like summer camp. Like it's such a fun day. So I didn't really feel the weight of any of the, like the expectations that came with being on Stanford Women's Golf. I was just so happy to be here. I think over time I've gained perspective on how special this program is and how accomplished it is. So like maybe knowing everything I know now, I would have felt differently as a freshman, but I was just kind of so pumped to be here.
It's kind of a unique student athlete experience with kind of the different classes and a lot of the peers, you know, they're going on to start, you know, startups and have careers in finance and all that stuff. But what do you feel like has been the most unique aspect, whether it was a class that you took or some sort of relationship you've developed over these 4 years at Stanford? What stands out?
I just think how diverse the population is and diverse in terms of background and also career trajectory, what people want to delve into. Like it makes you feel like special and not special at all in the same way because everyone's doing their own thing. So, I mean, for me, the most special thing has been the friends that I've made here. I think they've like pushed me to become so much better, and my non-golf friends I'm talking about, just because you see so much raw passion for whatever it is that they're doing, and it just makes you want to go and dive even deeper into your own specialty, which is golf for me. So I think that's probably the coolest thing. It's because you're just around so many high achievers, and when you find high achievers that are not competing against each other but like bringing each other up together is like super special, because that's also rare even for a place like here. So that's probably been the biggest thing I've gained from going to school here.
Which one of your friends do you feel like is on a path to the coolest career after school?
Me. No, I'm kidding.
Other than you. I mean, normally people aren't friends with themselves. They're just themselves. But
Like 2-3 of my friends have dropped out now, and they're in the startup space in AI. So it's been, I mean, like the sky's the limit with that type of stuff, and, you know, watch them go through the process of getting like funding and like a lot of late nights and like not knowing where things are headed, but just staying really committed to their cause. Yeah. I mean, we're all just 21, so there's a lot we don't know yet.
And before we let you go, your last Augusta National Women's Amateur is coming up in April. A couple years ago, I remember you changed your irons to try to hit it higher, I guess with an eye toward potentially lifting the trophy there. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest adjustment you feel like you need to make still to make sure that this April, you know, ends with you on that practice green holding the trophy?
That is a question I'm seeking to answer. So like I will be thinking about that for the next few months for sure. And that's going to take some like reflection on this year with Katie. And yeah, that me and you are asking the same question. So I will hopefully figure out by then, and then you can ask me.
Well, diagnose what's gone wrong the last few years. And you obviously had a great start to the tournament last year and were leading, but what do you feel like you'd do differently if you could take it back last year?
Nothing, honestly. I think a lot went right to put myself in position, and that's really all you need to do. You just need to be in that final round and one of those last few groups to even have a chance. And I think from there, it just, it comes down to having a great round or not. That final day winner is someone who plays really well at Augusta, which I have done before in practice. And I've had some good tournament rounds there too, but just a few more putts needed to fall. So I think just looking at what's gone right, how to recreate that and put myself in that same position again and hope for a more fun outcome.
Awesome, Mega. Well, enjoy your holidays. We'll be seeing a lot of you in the spring. You're also number one in the LPGA's new LCAP rankings. So we'll see if you can hold on to that top spot. And then ultimately, at Omni La Costa, as you guys try to win your second NCAA team title with you as a Stanford Cardinal. So again, thanks for the time, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Brentley.